What is going on, 1 week season fam? It is Tuesday night, week eight, and we're going to do something a little bit different this week. I am putting up the intro to the Angles podcast a few days early. Had some thoughts that I was working through and made some notes, and I realized that while I have all these notes written down and you guys have a little bit of extra time at this point in the week, it's worthwhile to get these out a little bit early, give you time to listen to them, and then on Friday night we can dive right into the slate. So as you know, one of the things that we're focused on the site is building better DFS players. And we talk about this a lot, the fact that essentially NFL DFS is a lot more about is a lot more than just knowing who the good plays are on a slate. There's a lot that goes into strategy and roster construction and psychology and all of that. And those are the things we really like to focus on the site, because essentially those are the things that are going to make you a better DFS player. So before we move forward, actually along those lines, I had a subscriber the other day who emailed to ask about the NFL DFS process course. And he had asked, essentially, you know, I've mentioned that everything that's in that course can be found on the site, or eventually will be talked about on the site. You know, if you're paying attention to everything, it's all stuff we talk about, just condensed into one space. And so this subscriber had said that he essentially had a 16-page, what he called OWS playbook of notes, 16 pages of notes of things that we had talked about on the site. And he asked if he should still pick up the course or if he probably had everything in the notes already. Obviously, we gave him a copy of the course for free because that was pretty cool. But he passed that along and said that I could put it up on the site if I wanted to do that. So later this week, I'm going to get that up on the site for any of you who want to just kind of see a condensed version of a lot of the things we've talked about over the last year and a half. So a little bit of a bonus feature there. I got another email this week from a subscriber who has made so much money in showdowns this year that he wanted to donate some money to the charity of my choice, and also wanted to buy $1,000 worth of 1 week season subscriptions and Xandamir showdown course for subscribers. So I have to figure out how we're going to kind of pick, you know, where those go. That's about, you know, if we're going to do probably 15 subscriptions and maybe 15 courses. And so, yeah, stay tuned for that later in the week. But anyhow, the goal is for all subscribers to be in that position where they can be like, oh, wow, hey, I've made so much money, I want to buy a bunch of subscriptions and courses for other people so they can be in the same position. But a lot of that isn't just reading the research and putting in a team. And that's why we drill into this stuff so much. And one of the things we always talk about is learning how to use the NFL edge for strong tournament play. And we talk about Cubs fan primarily using the NFL edge for his research and, you know, winning hundreds of thousands of dollars. And a lot of times, this is why we talk about it, is because a lot of the time he ends up on plays that I'm not on from the NFL edge. And so it is his ability to interpret the research and say, okay, what are some other ways this game could play out? So that's what I want to talk about right now, is kind of how to get to that point and how to use the research. And so we're going to look at a few examples. And there were a few games that really stood out to me this last week as games that just didn't play out the way we would have expected. And yet there were ways to use the NFL edge to essentially say, okay, here's what's likeliest to happen. And according to some of the things we're seeing, here are some other ways this game could play out. So one of the games that really stood out to me was Vikings at Lions. 42-30 was the final score. And one of the things that we mentioned in the NFL Edge this week was that the likeliest path was for this game this week, last week. The likeliest path for that game was for it to be a lower scoring game, but that there were enough explosive elements in place on each team that game flow could go a different direction. That was one of the things we mentioned in the NFL Edge. So if you are thinking in terms of tournament play, one way to look at a piece of information like that is to essentially say, okay, so if I'm going to build a lot of rosters for tournaments, or even if I'm going to build a few rosters for tournaments, or even if I'm going to build one roster for tournaments, we'll get to that in a moment. Here's a game that nobody's going to think of as a shootout, and it has the elements required for a shootout. Now, speaking of things we talk about on the site, things that don't get talked about often enough in the DFS community, what produces shootouts? Mentioned this before, we'll mention it again right here in a condensed format. Teams that attack downfield, vertical-minded offenses, produce shootouts. Teams with players who can score from anywhere on the field produce shootouts. So you have an offense like the Lions, who, as we've talked about on the site, they run to set up the vertical passing, similar to the Seahawks. And then a team like the Vikings that has pieces in Dalvin Cook, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, who can score from anywhere on the field. And those are elements that can blend into a shootout. Another game this last week that turned out just very differently than the field expected. Rams at Falcons. So you had an over-under of 55. And we talked in the NFL Edge, and I believe again in the player grid, the too large player grid, about the fact that there were elements in place that could make this game lower scoring than the field was expecting. And so we talked about essentially that, you know, here are the reasons why this game has an over-under of 55. Here are the reasons why there should still be points in this game. And here are the reasons why it could be a little bit lower scoring than expected. And one of those reasons why it could be lower scoring than expected was that with the addition of Jalen Ramsey, you essentially have a defense that's being able to play 10-on-10 football with a great coach in Wade Phillips and good defensive pieces elsewhere on the Rams. They can just make life difficult. And then obviously we talked about the Goff, and the Rams really haven't looked good even against teams that can't pass rush. Goff actually still didn't look good, but the Rams were able to put up 37 points. The Falcons were only able to put up 10. And so again, everyone's building for a shootout with both teams scoring a lot of points. And what we end up with is one team scoring 37 and the other team scoring only 10. And we could go through every week, and there are going to be examples of games that just turn out a little bit differently than people are expecting. And I think that one of the things that people get in the habit of doing is only building for the way a game is likeliest to play out. And there's so a couple things. One, if you're going to multi-enter, if you're going to put in more than one lineup, if you're going to put in 8, 9, 10 lineups even, you know, not saying 150, even just 8, 9, 10 lineups, it's going to be more effective to take one game and build around it a couple different ways than it is going to be to put in 8, 9, 10 teams that try to target 8, 9, 10 different things, or that try to be totally optimal and try to take, you know, 9 guys from 9 different teams and hope that you nail everything. And there's a reason why we keep talking about these things, and that reason is because these things work. But part of it is, again, being willing to embrace a little bit of uncertainty, being willing to take some shots on things that are a little bit less likely to happen. And so it's not making dumb plays or firing off shots at things that are just completely off the wall. It's saying, hey, this is something that's a lot more likely than the field is thinking. So one way to do that is to target a game that the field isn't thinking of as a shootout. And you could, and that could even be just the second or third highest total game. I mean, that's how straightforward it could be. Everybody's on this highest total game, second highest total game. You just go to the third highest total game. Vegas is still projecting a shootout. You're not going off the wall at all with your thoughts, and you build around that game. But there are a couple other ways to do that as well. We'll get to that in a moment. One other thought before we get to that, though. Another email that we got last week was from a subscriber who talked about essentially how by playing with a little bit less in bankroll than he usually plays with, he found that he was able to he emailed after the Angles pod last week where we talked about embracing uncertainty a little bit more. And he said that he found that he was able to build better rosters when he was playing with a little bit less in bankroll because, again, that fear of losing went away and he's able to say, all right, let me take a shot on this. So one way to do that is essentially to say, here's my bankroll for the week and you can play your normal bankroll, but start taking 5% of your bankroll for the week or 10% of your bankroll for the week and using those to play things a little bit differently than you've been playing. Using that portion of bankroll to be a little less conservative than you've maybe been being on your standard rosters. And what, you know, we've talked about, go over the speed limit, you know, a little bit more on these rosters. Take your foot off the brakes just a little bit more on these rosters and get some practice with a smaller percentage of your bankroll saying, you know what, if I lose this, that's no big deal. Let me take a shot at first place or something that we talked about in the DFS process course. Pull up, and we talked about this on the chat pod this last week, pull up the payout structure for the tournament you're building for. See what the payout structure is and get a visual of what first place is. See how quickly the payout drops from first place to second place. And then think about what would I need to do to win first place in this tournament? Not to put together a roster that can cash, but to win first place in this tournament. And we talk a lot, especially hammered this in the course, of setting, if you set your goals higher, then you're targeting those goals. If you set your goals at winning first place, it becomes a very different roster build process than if you set your goals at cashing. Stood out to me after the Patriots game on Monday night where they destroyed Sam Darnold and the Jets. And I believe it was Devin McCourty was essentially, you know, it was in reference to Sam Darnold saying that he was, you know, sure the Patriots are a great defense, but we're going to find their weaknesses and exploit those. And I think it was Devin McCourty essentially said, we don't come to play, we come to dominate. And that's a mindset that most defenses don't have. And so I've talked about it in the NFL Edge. Zandamir's talked about it in his write-ups. And, you know, you watch the game. I'm sure most of you watch Monday Night Football. And you see, you know, what we're saying, there's always a player, a defender on a body. There's no letting players run free. There's no open spaces and zones. There's always somebody on a body and they're always aggressive to the ball. And it's that mindset of saying, this isn't a bend but don't break defense like the Patriots might have been running in the past. This isn't wait for the opponent to make a mistake. This is we are coming here to dominate. And that's our mindset and that's what we're going to do. And it's that same type of thinking in building a roster and saying, I'm going to build for first place instead of building to cash. And again, this type of approach is going to lead to some weeks where your rosters are just completely wrong. But what does that matter when you, this season or next season, you know, you take a next 30 slates, right? Play showdowns, you can hit 30 slates this season easily, but take the next 30 slates and you miss on 22, 23 of those and the rest of them have a shot at first place, as opposed to missing on only 15 and the rest of them are minimum cashing. The amount of money that you're going to make by missing on a few more weeks, but targeting first place and getting those first place payouts or close to first place payouts is going to create a much higher ROI than just trying to cash. So a couple things that I want to take a look at. One is, we talked about this on the chat pod, and it was something that I intended to talk about on the Angles podcast last week, but slipped my mind. And that was this roster that I came across that won, finished second place in tournaments in week six. And this was a $150 buy-in tournament with about 1,500 entries. So a great, great, great bankroll building tournament. It was also $30,000 to first place, $20,000 to second place. So again, a great payout structure. It's not just this super steep, you know, $1 million to first place, $100,000 to second, $50,000 to third, or whatever it is, where it's basically like, if you don't hit first place, things are just dropping rapidly. So in this tournament, 1,500 entries, 30,000 to first place, 20,000 to second, and this is the second place team. And so people ask sometimes about, you know, player blocks and does this work for winning tournaments? And I thought this is a great example. So this is from DFS player STL Swish. And his roster was Cousins, Thielen, and Diggs. So it's a three-man player block right there, a three-man stack. Le'Veon Bell and Robbie Anderson, which is not a stack. It's purely a player block. It's purely saying the way that this game could play out, you know, both of these guys could have a good game, and if one of them doesn't, it probably means that the other is. You had a high-owned guy in Le'Veon Bell and a low-owned guy in Robbie Anderson. And then Julio Jones and Austin Hooper, who again work well together because they can both have a good game, but typically if one of them is having a disappointing game, then because they're such big parts of the offense, then likely the other one is having a good game. So if the Falcons had come out and scored 10 points, obviously this roster has no shot at first place. But when the Falcons came out and scored 33 points, you now just needed that one thing to go right to get two spots right. When this underpriced Jets offense came out and scored 24 points against Dallas, you're now getting the points from two things going right instead of just one thing going right. When Thielen, quote, disappointed with only 17 points against the Eagles, you're still getting all the wide receiver points because you have Thielen and Diggs. That also brings up another thing I wanted to talk about. Then we'll get back to that, and then we'll get to another roster I want to look at. But we talked about looking at games and thinking, okay, what's a very viable way, which we'll always hit on in the NFL Edge. What's a viable alternate way for this game to play out? Here's what's likeliest to happen. But if we're thinking tournaments, we're thinking trying to get first place, what's a really viable alternate way for this game to play out? Another way to apply that thinking is last week, for example, we looked at all the reasons why Kenny Golladay was in a really surprisingly good spot against the Vikings compared to what you would expect when you look at that matchup. And, you know, we talked about what the Vikings are good at is tackling after the catch. They haven't been great at forcing short throws. They haven't been great at preventing catches. They've just been excellent at stopping yards after the catch. And so for some teams, that really limits their upside of what they can do. But because of the way that the Lions offense is designed, it really didn't hurt them that much. These are catch and fall guys. And we talked about Marvin Jones, bottom four in the NFL in yards after catch per reception. Kenny Golladay is in the bottom half of the league. And this is a team that wants to attack downfield. So if they can catch passes, it doesn't matter if they're getting tackled because they're getting downfield receptions. So we talked about that, and obviously Golladay is the alpha in this offense. And so everything in my focus in the NFL Edge and in my thoughts through roster construction as a primarily single entry minded player was, okay, Golladay could have a really big game in this spot. And what did we see happen? Golladay had, you know, 2 points or something like that. And Marvin Jones had on DraftKings, it was 44 points, I think. And on FanDuel, it was over 30 points. And so the research was all correct. The supposition that it was Golladay who would benefit was obviously ended up being wrong. And that's about the fourth or fifth time that's happened this season, where the research has essentially said, here is a wide receiver who is in a spot for a good game because of these reasons in the matchup. And it wasn't that wide receiver who popped off in that game. It was the other wide receiver who popped off in that game. And so we talked about it last week with the Thielen and Diggs setup. And so those who are more willing to embrace uncertainty were able to see Diggs as clearly the best play against the Eagles because he was underpriced and he hadn't had a good game in a little while. So he would be lower owned, and he and Thielen were pretty even in expectations. So obviously you go to Diggs. Whereas the safer minded players, which is the vast majority of us, look at it and say, okay, so lean on Thielen because this is a great setup and Thielen has been producing. And so you go to the higher priced guy who has been producing lately and is going to be higher owned. And so it's that shift in thinking to say, okay, so if Galladay is in a good spot, and we know from the NFL Edge that he and Marvin Jones have similar responsibilities in this offense, that doesn't, we even mentioned, you know, Marvin Jones is in a good spot as well. He's less likely to hit because, you know, he's less consistent with his targets and his usage in this offense. But saying, okay, if I'm going to build more than one tournament roster, why don't I build one with Marvin Jones in it? Why don't I build, or like I talked about, my original plan in week six was I had those seven rosters in the FanDuel 2K buy-in millionaire maker. And my original plan was to have five rosters with Thielen, three rosters with Diggs, one on which they overlapped. And the thinking was, you know, this spot against the Eagles is too good to not use a Vikings receiver on all seven rosters. Thielen is more likely, so I'm going to use him on five. It's less likely that they both produce, so I'll only have them paired on one. But I'm also going to get three Diggs rosters. Obviously, like I said, somehow through my builds, I ended up with one Diggs roster. But it would be the same thing with Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay. It'd say, okay, so this is a good spot. Maybe not seven out of seven rosters, but if I'm building seven rosters, let's get a Lions receiver on five of these rosters, and let's put Galladay on three, and let's put Marvin Jones on two. And sure, Marvin Jones might dud, and that kills that roster, but we're targeting first place, and this is the type of play that gets you to first place, so that's okay. You don't mind the weeks when they dud, because then you're there on those plays when they get those points. And again, this is not just saying let's take shots on guys. It's saying here's places where the research points to things and our mind is going to this receiver. Or again, I've talked about understanding, you know, you as the reader should optimally try to understand how my mind works and where my shortcomings are. So again, part of the reason why I focus on single entry play and smaller field tournaments is that's where I'm sharpest, because I do have safer tendencies than a strong large field player is going to have. So you could say, okay, so JM is saying that both of these receivers are in a good spot. Galladay gets more usage, so Galladay is the guy he's focused on. But maybe he's overlooking Marvin Jones. Maybe I take a shot on Marvin Jones here because he did say in the research that Marvin Jones sets up well in this matchup as well. And so again, taking that and saying, what's another way that this game could play out? Or what's another way that this matchup that's positive for this position could play out? And thinking through those things and giving yourself that extra edge in tournaments to find the good under-owned play. Something we always talk about is not being one of those people who just takes low-owned plays because nobody's on them, but instead taking low-owned good plays. So we looked at that roster that had the three separate player blocks. And as I pointed out in the chat pod, that was three separate player blocks from three separate games, which is another thing I really love, because we see people stacking games a lot. And so what we saw this last week, we saw a lot of people who were just following the over-unders and stacking Rams and Falcons on the same roster. Instead of saying, all right, maybe only one of these offenses produces, or, you know, a situation where one team spreads the ball around a lot and another offense doesn't. And so you take the player block from the team where you have more concentrated targets, and you create an opportunity. A, you're doing something a little bit different from the field, and you create an opportunity to capture points from three different spots, and you're betting on, okay, this offense is going to have a good game, or much better game than where they're priced. This offense is going to have a better game than where they're priced, and this offense is going to have a better game than where they're priced. And you get three player blocks in there, you just need those three things to go right, and you get seven spots right on your roster. So another one I want to look at, and this ties back into that Vikings and Lions game, is winning roster. This is a 100 entry tournament, $1,500 buy-in, $40K to first place. And Papa Gates won first place with, so again, these are the types of tournaments we always talk about targeting, which is smaller field tournaments, especially if you can get into higher dollar, smaller field tournaments. You tend to get great payout structures. And so this particular tournament, you need to get first place. You're still targeting first place, but it's out of 100 people. So it's a very realistic target to hit. And single entry. And so this roster was Matthew Stafford, Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones, Adam Thielen. Now, I'd also like to draw attention to the fact that Adam Thielen got hurt and got 9.5 points, and Kenny Galladay completely dudded and got 3.1 points. And this roster finished first place. Stafford, you got the 32.5. Marvin Jones, you got the 43.3. And so essentially by saying, here's a game that has elements for a shootout, and nobody is going to be on this game as a stack. If I'm wrong, who cares? Because eventually you're going to be right on a spot like this and get first place. So Stafford, 2.7% owned. Thielen, 4.5% owned. So this might have been a 110 entry tournament. Galladay, 12.7% owned, because again, he was the likeliest guy to do well in this spot. Galladay, 12.7% owned, means that 1 week season was not the only place that was finding this research. Other people were realizing, hey, this matchup is actually a little bit better for wide receivers than it seems on the surface. 12.7% owned for Galladay. And what is Marvin Jones? 0.91% owned. So one out of 110 rosters had Marvin Jones, only this roster. So Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones combined got 46.4 points. I mean, that's not some monster score to get from two wide receivers combined. But by targeting the pairing, by targeting the full offense, it doesn't matter that Galladay got the dud. What matters, it's hard to get 46 points from two wide receivers. I mean, you see that all season long. It's just difficult. Wide receivers are a volatile position. So if you take both these guys and you think they're in a good spot, take them both. And one of them duds, you know, maybe they both got 22, 23 points. But in this case, one of them hit a dud. It's fortunate that the one who hit a dud was the higher owned player. And you just get those wide receiver points at that salary. So again, it's looking at this, in this instance, it's looking at a game and saying, here's a way that this game could play out that people just aren't on. The over-under was 43. But as we talk about, that's just the median projection. If we played out the slate, the game 10,000 times, that's where Vegas thinks things would roughly land. But the score in this game was 42 to 30, 72 total points. So just because a game has an over-under of 43 doesn't mean it can't shoot out. It also doesn't mean you can blindly target every game with a 43-point over-under. But when there are shootout elements in place, which we will always talk about in the NFL Edge, those are spots to consider building around. Now, would we all have the balls to do it with a single-entry shot? Probably not. Or the bankroll to say, you know what, in this single-entry tournament, I'm fine just losing if this game hits its over-under, but we have concentrated distribution of touches on two teams with explosive weapons. And if it shoots out, pretty much everything's flowing through these players. And so you build around a game like that. And so start practicing using a smaller percentage of your bankroll and focusing on taking some shots on that style of play, whether it's okay, all the research in the NFL Edge points to this being a good matchup for this position group. And JM is focused on this receiver, but what about this receiver? Or here's a game where we talk through it and this is the way it's likeliest to play out, but there are also some shootout elements in place here. So I'm going to just take this smaller percentage of my bankroll this week and embrace a lot more uncertainty than I normally do and build for this game to turn into a shootout. Things like that are going to make a big difference. As far as your, you know, if you're questioning, well, how do I get to first place? This is how you get to first place, is by thinking in these ways and approaching things from these angles. And again, being willing to embrace a little bit more uncertainty. And I thought that was a really cool contribution, was just that idea of, hey, you know, do it with a little bit less in bankroll. I think that's something that I talked about on Roto Grinders probably 3 or 4 years ago and really haven't thought much about since then. But you don't have to do it with all your bankroll at once on a weekend, but just say, all right, let me take a smaller percentage of my bankroll and see what will happen if I embrace some uncertainty. And again, it's not a 1 week sample size either. You're not looking at one slate. Do it for the rest of the season. We've got 10 weeks left. For the rest of the season, take 5 or 10% of your bankroll each week and embrace some more uncertainty. And I bet you're going to find that that 5 to 10% has a higher ROI at the end of week 17 than the rest of that bankroll. And maybe you'll hit some, you know, in with some of those rosters in week 8, 9, 10, 11, and really boost your confidence to move up to a much larger chunk of your bankroll each week, embracing that uncertainty. But a lot of times it can take one of those hitting to realize, okay, this works, and this is a way to approach things. And so, yeah, just a lot of the things that we talked about throughout the season, and cool to see those things in action, and some cool examples between the way some of these games played out that are just a little different than the likeliest way for them to play out, or this roster finishing, you know, 20K cash with three separate player blocks from three separate teams, or this other roster just building a game stack around a game with shootout elements that nobody's on, taking down 40K. Lots of the things we talk about, cool to see them in action. And yeah, always kind of what we're driving toward is those things that can really help turn us into better DFS players as a community, keep pushing that 1 week season pennant up to the top of the leaderboard. So with that, I'm going to get out of here, get back to researching and then writing the NFL Edge. And I will see you on the site throughout the week, and I will see you on the Angles Pod, where we will dive right into roster construction on Friday night.